Your Grace. Are we on? Your Grace, I was very intrigued by your distinction between shame and guilt, and was hoping that you might elaborate on that and perhaps give an illustration or two to help me understand it better.
I think, you know, guilt is something we always have. It's not something we can, we don't have to work to feel guilt when we do something wrong or acknowledge that we have a passion in ourselves. And I think guilt becomes very strong not simply because of particular actions we do, but precisely because of the passions that are with us always, or at least we're struggling not to have them. But I think we all know the tenacity of the passions, that even if we work a little bit to overcome them, they seem to come back and grow stronger sometimes. And I think it's that process of continually struggling with a particular passion that traps us in a sense of guilt, because we feel that it's something beyond our power. Sometimes the passions are strong, so they make us feel that we are powerless to do anything, and that powerlessness breeds a sense of guilt. We say, I can't do anything about this passion, therefore it must simply be something I was given or something that's my fault. I can't do anything about it. And that in a sense, prevents repentance. I think as an illustration is sort of the struggle that we have to go to confession. Right? Well, I'll go next week, because let me try to overcome this passion. I'll give it one more week, and then the next week comes, and you still have that passion, and you're still giving in to that passion. So you say, well, I'll go to confession next week, or next month. Well, there's no, if you're a clergy, no other priests around, so I will wait till the clergy retreat. Then I will go to confession. I will find Sayedna or find another brother clergy. But then you go to the clergy retreat and it's busy and you don't have time, and you say, well, that's okay. I still haven't overcome my passion, so I won't confess it just yet. And all of that continually builds up that sense of guilt. But shame contains hope, because we are guilty before other men, but we are ashamed before God. So if you have that shame, then you're given the grace to confess. It requires, again, a humbling. You have to sort of go down and say, yes, I am guilty of this. Even if you accept, you can say you're guilty, but you shouldn't be guilty. And that's what shame. Shame is a voluntary action, but guilt is sort of an involuntary imposition upon us. I don't know if that answers it. I think you could say that. I think guilt is not necessarily a bad thing. It can become a bad thing if we isolate it, but it can also lead us to a better to shame and to a better repentance.
For Grace, would you say that maybe guilt has to do with our actions and shame has to do with our condition?
Say that again.
Sorry, I forgot about this. Your Grace, would you say maybe you could say that guilt has to do with our actions and shame has to do with our condition or situation?
Sure, I think you could say that because you know, guilt is sort of an immediate reaction that we have to whatever, eating more food than we should have, or whatever the passion is that we struggle with, or looking at pornography on the internet, you know, you have that immediate sense of guilt. But then to really overcome that passion, you have to move towards shame, because shame will prevent you from going back to the passion. But you know, if you simply get over the guilt, then the next time the temptation comes, you give in, and you get that initial sense of guilt. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. But then it goes away. But shame is something that should become a condition for us all the time, so that we don't give in to those temptations, or at least try not to give in. So.
Thank you.
Fine.
The importance of this is especially good as we think of children. The notion of guilt as it pertains to maybe law, and the shame of which many of our children now are counseled otherwise to try to avoid or not face.
You mean in the world? That's yes. It is a difficult challenge, especially for our children, but also for us, because the that view is so prevalent. You know, that we have to care for ourselves, you know, and it's really inspiring us to self-love, and so our children are being taught to have self-love. It's not put in those words. It's called self-esteem, or but ultimately it inspires that self-love, and self-love is really the source of our passions. You know, it's what leads us to anger, to the passions of the flesh. All of that is rooted in self-love. So I think you can overcome that self-love. It's fine to have a good opinion of yourself, you know, to have self-esteem in one sense, but the moment that becomes, you cross over that line to self-love, which is a very fine line and difficult to see, then it becomes a problem, and it becomes very difficult, yes, to guide our children especially.
It seems hard enough for us to take on this challenge, but in a practical sense, with lots of people who are so prone to depression and like broken, and they hear this word of Saint Siloam, keep your mind in hell and such, it just, before they even begin the struggle, they're just shattered. And so it seems like a large struggle is to, how do you set someone on this path of, like Father Zechariah says that there's a direct connection between the amount of shame in confession and the consolation you feel afterwards, when some people can't even bring themselves to that first step of of shame? What are some maybe some practical ways to help little ones in this necessary road without breaking them?
Sure. Yeah, it's very difficult. It's not sometimes not good to even speak some of these things to people, like keep your mind in hell and do not despair. It's better not to even say that to certain people, and that's where it requires discernment on our part as clergy to really see the level of see where people are at. It really requires a lot of patience because on the part of us as clergy, because you may need to help someone for many years, and you can never force shame or a sense of repentance on someone, but you can, I think, first of all, pray for them, because it's the grace of God that works that change, and we have to help as clergy, but so often we see how powerless we are, and but if you rely on the grace of God, oftentimes that's enough to you have to be patient and leave people free, because they have to freely find that repentance, and it's difficult because we want to say, don't do this, do that. And sometimes people want us to tell them that. They come to us in confession and say, Father, I have this passion, give me a penance. So there's all kinds of extremes, and how do you redirect that self-will? In a sense, it's all self-will, whether they say, I know I'm a great sinner and I need to feel shame, please give me a penance. Here's what I want you to give me. So that's self-will, but it's also self-will when someone doesn't know that they are struggling. Perhaps they have, so many people do, as you say, have are mental illnesses and just emotional imbalances and spiritual are spiritually fragile. So many people are fragile. It's, I think we have to start with simply showing our love and being patient and gently offering a word, which is difficult to find. And that's why you have to pray. I can't tell you what word to use in each particular situation. You need to humble yourself before God and ask for that word, and then He will give it, even if it's no word at all.